This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal. But today I have two very special guests, Vinnie Eastwood of the wildly popular Vinnie Eastwood Show, and Susan Paussell, who was the program manager for Pete Santilli, who is going to be the subject of our conversation. He's proven to be a very controversial fellow. All of us have had our experiences with him, and it seems to me that there's so much rumor, speculation, controversy surrounding him that would be very worthwhile for us to spend some time dissecting the situation. Suzanne, why don't you begin by explaining your history with Pete Santilli and your ultimate judgments, but in a preliminary fashion so we can go into it in more detail later.
Oh, sure. Well, I wasn't a program director. I collaborated with him, did a Bunker news break, 15-minute, which turned into about 30-minute or so segment. I started working with him. Everything was, just fine. We collaborated on a couple of articles, and he met up with Vinnie Eastwood, and I was excited because I had watched a couple of shows of Vinnie Eastwood, and I was very impressed, and so I was telling him, I'd like to really talk to Vinnie Eastwood. And it happened that we ended up working on the Guerrilla Media together. And then I found out that Pete and Susanna had edged Vinnie out of the project. So since my husband was creating the website for Guerrilla Media Network, I told him to stop production. And I told Susanna that I didn't want to do the Bunker News Break. I didn't want to show up on the show anymore. And this was after I'd spoken to Vinnie about this. And cut all communication, all ties, told them to take down everything of, my picture and everything from their website, take it all down. This resulted in a phone call from Pete Santilli, which resulted in him screaming the C-U-N-T word at me for about 45 minutes. Susanna was crying on the phone.
Is Susanna his wife?
No, that's his girlfriend. His wife.
His girlfriend. He has a wife, too?
He has a wife. He is married. Yes.
So he's a wife and a girlfriend, and I guess his wife knows about the girlfriend?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, she does.
So it's okay with her, do we not know? Who knows?
No, I don't think it's okay. From what I've been told, it's not okay with her at all.
Give us a timeline. I mean, how long ago was it that you first encountered Pete Santilli?
It was probably about a year ago now. I stopped working with him about March or April of this year, and it was about 6 months or 8 months that I worked with him before that.
So the segment you were doing for his show was about news developments in the news?
Yes, because I'm a journalist. I would bring my articles as well as articles that I couldn't get to in the news, but I still knew about it. So it gave me a chance to broaden, because I only get to write about 4 or 5 articles a day, but I get to read, a plethora of news. So it gave me a chance to talk about things that I didn't get a chance to write about. And it became this little, at the top of the hour, the second hour, this little Bunker news break where they would get actual news, and the audience really, really liked it. And the segment kind of expanded out to about a 30 minutes. Sometimes it took up the whole second hour. But when I left, the audience was very upset. I got a lot of emails, a lot of messages on Facebook and Twitter asking me what the name of my site was again. Do I have my own radio show? What's going on with me? Because they missed my presence on the show, and it definitely had an impact on his audience when I left.
Well, I'll bet it did. I mean, you'd be a kinder, gentler personality in contrast to him, his very strident and arrogant manner. I mean, it would seem to me that you would be very much of an asset to someone of his disposition. So, and did you leave because of specific instances? Was that at all related to his interview of me?
No, Danny called me, the day that he made the decision to suspend, Pete. Pete did not get fired. He was suspended. And then, and I have the emails because Pete was sending me correspondence, that he was sending mostly everybody. And he wrote Danny back and said, well, I up your suspension and I quit. So Pete quit. He did not get fired.
He quit.
He quit. Danny suspended him for 2 weeks. He said, I take your suspension and I quit your network. So
that was...
But at American Freedom Radio, to say that you're being suspended actually means you're getting fired.
Oh, really?
No, but...
Yeah, Vinny, go ahead and add some thoughts on what Susanna has been saying here. Go right ahead.
Well, we had a conference call, I think it was the day after your interview, James, with Pete Santilli. He admitted that it was the worst interview, and, oh, man, I just got to apologize for you, to you on behalf of everybody at American Freedom Radio, Jim. That was just really, really the worst interview that has ever been done on the network. And even Pete agreed. We've got the recordings of that call, I think, maybe floating around somewhere. I'm not psychopathic, so I don't record everything verbatim, but... It seemed that he'd been very genuine. What was very interesting is that he told me everything that I wanted to hear. I wanted to hear he was never going to treat anybody like that again. I wanted to hear he wasn't going to use the network as a place to like just launch attacks at people and bring us trouble and things. And the very next day, I think, you were on Dr. Kevin Barrett's show talking about this incident, and he calls in and does the exact same freaking thing he did on his radio show that we got in trouble for in the first place. So that was just... He's talking out one side of his mouth, you know, and doing the exact opposite of what he's saying. And then I realized, oh my God, I've told him all the exclusive secrets of Guerrilla Media over a number of conference calls. All my ways, you know, like Batman. And now he's got them. And then he just disappears off AFR. Oh, I'm quitting. Yeah, right. You didn't quit. You didn't get suspended. He's a Marine, and he got Semper fired. That's all there is to it.
Well, from my point of view, it was certainly the most bizarre interview I ever had, and I've had a lot of them. I mean, I've probably done 1,000 interviews. I'm talking about where I am being interviewed. I've done, you know, over 660 interviews on my own shows and on other shows before that. But for me to be a guest on a show, it was really quite extraordinary. And I just adopted the rope-a-dope strategy. You know, I figured, well, I'm just going to let this guy, you know, lay it on me. And he just did over and over, but incredibly repetitiously, he kept asking me questions I'd already answered and making much about very little. And it appeared to me at the time that he was some kind of stooge for Judy Wood, who has been upset with me for simply asking John Hutchison, when I featured the two of them together, a bit about his background and education, since he's made claims for extraordinary discoveries which fall into the domain of electromagnetism among the most complex in physics. So I simply had asked John, you know, what was his background and training? He said he had flunked crayons and coloring books, which Judy thought was hilarious, but I found non-responsive. So I just, you know, went on to other topics, since it was evident to me he didn't want to address this. But I really thought it was a question I had to ask. I'd in the past interviewed Judy 15 times on my shows. I had given her 3 hours to speak at the Madison Conference, which was the first organized by Scholars for 9/11 Truth, which I founded. And I published a chapter by her in the 9/11 Conspiracy, which is the first book from Scholars. So I really found it quite extraordinary when she turned as though on a dime against me, would no longer respond to any inquiries of mine.
Judy Wood turned against me because I asked her the day after 9/11 if she was tired.
If she was tired?
Yeah.
What? That's another completely innocuous question, and she took offense at that?
Yeah. She says, I'm done, and she's never contacted me again.
I'm done. Was that on the air that you had?
No. That was just on a Skype thing. I mixed up a date or something, so she was supposed to be coming on that day rather than the day before, which was actually 9/11, which I thought I'd scheduled her for. And so she didn't show up and I had to kind of wing it. and I had a scheduled guest.
You had her scheduled for the day of 9/11, the actual day of the event?
Yeah.
What was her claim to fame that warranted your bringing her on even before she'd begun publishing or talking about 9/11?
No, not the day of 9/11. I'm not that old, man.
Oh, I mean an anniversary.
Yeah. This was earlier this year, last year.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got it.
So
9/11 of 2012.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
It was the 10th anniversary of 9/11, and I wanted to give Judy a good 2 hours to come on and share her her information and her evidence and that kind of thing.
The 10th anniversary would have been 2011. Yeah. But tell me, had you previously interviewed her?
Yeah.
How many times roughly would you guess?
I think maybe I'd interviewed her once, but we'd also had a number of other calls. It was interesting. She's the most difficult person to convince that I wasn't going to set her up. It actually took me. I wanted to interview her for 2 hours, and I did. But in order to get the 2 hour interview, I had to try and convince her for 2 hours on a Skype call that I wasn't some kind of agent.
What a waste of time!
Yeah.
I would eventually, before I invited her to the Vancouver hearings, notwithstanding this estrangement where she was not responding to any of my inquiries. And in May, before the event in June of 2012, I posted a 5-star review of her book, but I explained on Amazon.com, but I explained that I felt that while her arguments were sufficient to defeat large nukes, the use of large nukes to bring about the demolition, that she really hadn't ruled out mini or micro nukes. And because of that one qualification, I was attacked over 2,000 times on Amazon.com by followers of Judy Wood, whom I believe actually include Judy Wood, using the name Emmanuel Goldstein, and Andrew Johnson using another name, over 2,000 times. Now, this is not comments on her book. This is comments on my review of her book, which was at that point a 5-star review. And after the Vancouver hearings, so much evidence was produced that substantiated what I had said, to wit that it had been done using micro or mini nukes, and that the key to it was the USGS, US Geological Survey dust samples, which were many and varied, taken over, you know, quite a period of time over many different locations, which showed all kinds of residues of a nuclear event, strontium and barium, lithium, lanthanum, uranium, thorium. I mean, it was just astonishing how many, several presenters really gave more than enough evidence to convince me and others that if you compare alternative hypotheses, such as, say, the use of nanothermite or the use of large nukes or the use of directed energy weapons, about which, by the way, she's always been extraordinarily vague, that the evidence really tends to support the use of a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes, which actually, given her definition of directed energy weapons as sources of energy far greater than conventional that can be directed, actually fits these micro or mini nukes, because they're shaped charges, they can be directed, and of course they produce vastly more energy than conventional. And therefore, the hypothesis that it might have been done, for example, by taking out 1 10-floor cube per second in the case of the North Tower, where all 110 floors were standing vertical, would take 11 seconds, which just happens to correspond to NIST estimates. In the case of the South Tower, because the top 3 floors are tilting over and were taken out as 1 9 seconds. Now, that's not the only possible arrangement, but it just suggests, you know, how the evidence could converge, because what we're witnessing is so obviously not a controlled demolition in the classic sense that we see present with WTC 7, Building 7, where all the floors are coming down at the same time. There's a pile of debris equal to about 12% of the original, or about 5.5 floors. And the upper floors are not blowing apart in every direction, because, of course, a classic controlled demolition is controlled by gravity, which works in one direction only. And yet when you turn to the Twin Towers, they're blowing apart in every direction from the top down, All the floors are waiting their turn to be blown to kingdom come. And the building's being converted into millions of cubic yards of very fine dust. And when it's over, there's nothing left. So they're clearly destroyed by very different mechanisms. And the question becomes, how was it done? And,
Here's the problem. Firstly, we're getting off the subject of Pete Santilli. We're making it about Judy Wood.
No, we're going to come right back because I was just going to lead back to the, you know, revising my review of her to a 3-star review because of all this evidence. And yet her fans and followers added, you know, thousands more criticism. I mean, it's just absolutely stunning that if you were to go look at my review on Amazon.com, there may be by now as many as 5,000 comments on my review. And 4,000 of them are going to be critical by followers of Judy Wood. It's just stunning.
Well, it's kind of like a cult of personality that we're dealing with on a daily basis. And this has occurred to me thusly. Every single person that has the ability to have lots and lots of people listen to them has a challenge to overcome. That challenge is their own ego, and whether or not they're actually doing it for themselves or for those people that are listening. Some people forget what they're really supposed to be there for, and they stop acting like they should.
Yeah. Well, Santilli may be case in point. He seems to love the sound of his own voice, but I mean, it was a most... I bring this up in part because it was the most bizarre interview where he was attacking me.
Ooh, that reminds
for my
me.
Criticism of Judy Wood, you know, and he kept hammering me about Hurricane Erin. What about Hurricane Erin? Which I never was able to get Judy herself to explain. I mean, when she began talking about Hurricane Erin, my interpretation had been that she was suggesting it was a potential source of energy for the destruction of the Twin Towers by means of some directed energy mechanism, and she contacted me when I suggested that on the air and said, no, I was wrong, that I didn't understand her. But she would never explain to me what she meant. And so far as I can tell, Hurricane Erin had virtually nothing to do with the events of 9/11. I mean, it may have been there, and it may not have been widely reported.
The part of the interview that was most shocking for me was being recorded during the off-air breaks, right? When you go off air, okay, and the audience ain't listening, you become very different sometimes, you know, and also under FCC regulations, you don't, you usually don't swear while you're on air, but it was just this kind of, you had a very natural reaction. You kept it very professional during the on-air segments, and on the off-air segments, it's like, what the frick are you doing? And to record those off-air private conversations and to continue the interview and escalate it to a shouting match kind of thing and to record and publish that is the lowest stuff I have ever seen perpetrated by anybody in talk radio. You know, this is just sick. This is like vengeance sort of thing. Somebody's got a vendetta. And it occurred to us, and I think Suzanne, you said that Judy Wood was behind the scenes during that interview, pulling the switches and levers and dancing them around like a little puppet, wasn't she?
Suzanne Nicole told me that she does that with all of his shows. She's in a separate Skype chat. She's listening to the show, and she drops Pete a suggestion for a question or a direction for the or an admonishment, you know, direction for the conversation, or an admonishment toward the guest or the listener or whatever. It's quite disturbing that somebody would just be sitting there telling you what to say, and you'd say it.
Now,
you know, it's a,
this
you
actually
know?
Explains a bit, because my last argument with Judy Wood before she blocked me for asking if she was tired was what time the interview was. And instead of actually saying anything or reiterating or trying to explain further, she was merely copy-pasting again and again. She copy-pasted the exact same thing 3 times into the Skype chat, which was a confirmation for the time that we were being interviewed, right? And I struck this as very, very weird behavior kind of thing. Copy paste over and over again. It's like, hold on, I'm an adult. I know what was going on here. Let's find a solution. Let's do the recording now. But that strikes me as very similar to the way that Pete was repeating himself and asking questions that had already been answered, is that he was simply reading the various copy pastes of Judy Wood again.
Yeah, that would make
very possible.
I think so too, because there was like a series of three or four questions that he repeated about a dozen different times during the interview. I mean, it was bizarre.
Mm. And of course, after he did that, to you, Jim, not the original interview that was like, okay, this guy's on the last frickin' peg with me. There's no frickin' way I'm going to trust him if he violates anything on this. And then he does the very next day after promising profusely that he won't, and then starts up GorillaMediaNetwork.com without even telling me. Okay, so he's on the network that I'm on. We're having conferences about starting Guerrilla Media and working together. And then he gets fired from the network, stops contacting me, and then starts up Guerrilla Media Network without me.
Well, it was a blatant case of plagiarism. I mean, he was taking your idea, your concept, even your image, as I recall, of a gorilla, and adopting it as
a... I never had a gorilla image.
You never had a gorilla image?
No, I mean, mine's...
But you had the idea of the Guerrilla Radio.
Yeah, well, he just stole the name, Guerrilla Media. Because it's like guerrilla filmmaking, if you've ever heard of that term. It's just we make the media in the same kind of lifeblood that guerrilla filmmakers do, because, you know, you're on a tight budget, you've got tight time scales, and ain't nobody going to help you. So you've got to basically be a jack of all trades and a master of none and just get the damn job done.
Yeah.
And facilitate other people who are already... showing that they have the level of commitment required to be given a position, to be given free coverage, to be given a platform where we ask for donations on their behalf and then send them the money kind of thing.
Suzanne, just to make sure I have this clear, you're suggesting to me that Judy Wood actually was... more or less directing Santilli on a whole series of his programs, not only the one with me, but many others as well.
That's what Susanna Cole told me. So I figured she would know. They have separate Skype chats. I had access to their Skype chat. So if I was listening to the show, I would Skype to her and say, that's awesome or that's great or whatever. But she told me that this was a chat that only she and Pete and Judy Wood could see. And then eventually she was taken out of that conversation in the chat Skype, in the Skype chat. So she was up to a point watching this correspondence between the two of them where Judy Wood would suggest something or say something for him to say, and then he would say it on the air, or he would make that suggestion on the air, or he would... turn the direction that she was giving him in the Skype chat toward the guest or the caller or whatever was going on in the show. That's very disturbing to me.
Yeah, well, it's quite fascinating. I mean, I got to know Judy, over the years I was featuring her on my show because I thought her work was so important and that it deserved publicity so that others could study it. Where I would take the listeners to her website. She didn't have the book then, but I was pioneering an interaction between the computer and radio so that we'd go actually to websites and look at images and diagrams and maps and all this sort of thing and talk about them on the air where everyone would know, they could see what we were talking about. But, I learned that she had a certain mindset that verged on paranoia, and I think that's something that has spilled over here. We have to take our first break. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, with my special guests, Suzanne Paussell and Vinnie Eastwood, and we're talking about the Pete Santilli phenomenon. We'll be right back. Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, continuing my conversation with Suzanne Paussell and Vinnie Eastwood. Suzanne, did you ever get that inkling about Judy? I mean, Vinnie obviously went through it. He had to deal 2 hours with Judy just to convince her that he was on the upright and wanted to interviewer in a legitimate, straightforward way rather than to undermine her. But she has a way of looking at the world that is very seductive. She'll always say, well, why did he do this? Or why did he say this? Why didn't he do this? Why didn't he?
The amount of conversations.
I've never seen such an elaborately paranoid mind in my life.
Yeah, and that's the reason why she doesn't have many long-lasting relationships, is because people just don't put up with that kind of BS, you know? It's like if you're married to somebody and your wife keeps accusing you of cheating on her when you're not, sometimes you start thinking about cheating, don't you?
You're paying the price for it anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, like, what's the point of suffering if I don't get to stick my... If I don't get to stick my McNuggets and some sweet and sour sauce in it every once in a while.
Judy's a very strange, she's a very strange personality. Suzanne, did you ever have much direct interaction with Judy so you formed your own impressions of her?
I spoke to her twice on the phone. She emailed me and she wanted me twice
on the phone. See, I spoke with her hundreds of times.
Well, the two times that I spoke to her was very interesting. She started emailing me. Telling me that she wanted me to write an article about this specific thing. And it happened to be in a interview that Piers Morgan did with Jesse Ventura. So I found the YouTube video and I sent it to her and I said, you know, Jesse Ventura said it best. I can't do anything better than what Jesse did. And this YouTube video is already out. It's been seen by this many people. We should just promote this. I don't want to waste my time writing this article. And she didn't like that. So, you know, nobody tells me what to write about. If somebody suggests something to me and I look into it and I'm like, yeah, that's worth writing about, I will. But I don't take kindly to, like, being told, you need to write about this. You should write about this. That this is what you should be writing about. Yeah. The two times that I spoke to her, they wanted me to write a hit piece on Gordon Duff.
Really?
Yeah. And
what was the objective of that? Why attack Gordon?
To discredit Veterans Today and Gordon Duff.
And was there a deeper reason for what does Veterans Today represent they didn't like? I mean, notwithstanding that I'm publishing all this stuff on there, was this after I began to publish stuff about the use of mini nukes and all that?
Well, I was on YouTube watching stuff like I periodically do, and I stumbled upon a video, an interview with Gordon Duff. I don't remember when it was taken. And I don't remember who was interviewing him. I think it was Sam Harris. And Gordon Duff said 40% of what's published on Veterans Today is a lie, because if he told the truth, he would be killed.
Yeah, I think what he really meant was, see, Gordon has very deep intel connections. He was even being considered for director of the Central Intelligence at one point. And he can't talk about everything he knows. I mean, that would be something he could not do without, you know, severe ramifications. So, I mean, I take it he's talking about more withholding information than he is, you know, misleading. Although, of course, by withholding, you're not giving the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. You're giving part of the truth. I don't know that I'm aware of a case where he deliberately misrepresented anything where I could say, yes, he did, that it was he made false claims there. I don't know that. But I'm not aware of that either. Yeah, but I do have reason to believe that he's very often withheld information where he knows better but can't say all he knows.
Well, I'm an Air Force brat. I just had a conversation with my dad 2 days ago about a secret mission that he was on that he was only allowed to talk about 2 years ago, because it was just declassified. So I totally get that. This video became the center of this conversation with Susanna and Pete and Judy Wood. They wanted me to write this article. And I said, I have no reason to write this article. I don't want to write this article. I'm not going to write this. If you want to write the article, you go ahead. But I don't want to write this article.
Where would you have published the article had you written it?
Well, I have a website. OccupyCorporatism.com.
Okay, so that's where they wanted you to publish it, on OccupyCorporatism.com.
Yeah, because that's my website. It's one of the most popular alternatives.
See, they must have liked your standing. In other words, if you were saying this about Gordon Duff, people are going to take it more seriously than if they say it about Gordon Duff.
Well, yes, the thing about Pete is
that's why I said I wasn't going to write the article, because I'm not My job is to expose corruption. My job is not to defame people and ruin careers.
Not to axe personalities.
Yeah. Yes, Pete seems to have a knack for finding really good ideas, really talented people, and stealing and or exploiting them. That's it.
Yeah.
That's his entire career path. You trace him back. We've got all the documents to prove it. He's been scamming people for a long freaking time. And it's not showing any signs of stopping. If anything, it shows signs of accelerating. And at this point, Suzanne, you told me something very disturbing the other day. Didn't you say that he was asking people to storm the White House and take them out?
Yes, on his show. You know, the whole debacle with him and the donations. And so he gets back on his show after the trucker shutdown and everything. And he starts telling his audience, and I have this downloaded, that he wants them to take guns, go to Pennsylvania Avenue, demand that everyone vacate the premises, and he will not be satisfied until he takes Judy Wood hand in hand and walks into the White House.
Takes Judy Wood hand in hand and walks into the White House, what, declaring that they're the king and queen?
I know! It was bizarre.
You know what song popped into my head right then? We're off to see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz. I can just imagine Pete and Judy holding hands and skipping into the White House singing.
Well, does it have? Is there a mutual adulation aspect to this? I mean, do they both somehow, are they both infatuated with one another?
Oh, I don't know. He's got a relationship with Susanna Cole. That I know about, but I don't know.
I
know he respects her and admires her.
Did you read the article by Gordon by Stu Webb while it was up?
Yeah.
And, I mean, I just read it before we came on the air together, and there's some pretty weird stuff in there. I mean, Stu is reporting that in May of this year, Santilli attempted to gain notoriety for stating, and I'm quoting now from the article, Hillary Clinton needs to be convicted. She needs to be tried, convicted, and shot in the vagina. I want to pull the trigger. The full quote.
Oh, is that my article?
The full quote from the Pete Santilli show is, I want to shoot her right in the vagina, and I don't want her to die right away. I want her to feel the pain. I want to look her in the eyes, and I want to say, on behalf of all Americans that you've killed, on behalf of the Navy SEALs, the family of Navy SEAL Team 6, who were involved in the false hunt down of this Obama bin Laden thing, that whole fake scenario, because these Navy SEALs know the truth. They killed them all. On behalf of all those people, I'm supporting our troops by saying we need to try, convict, and shoot Hillary Clinton in the vagina. That is bizarre.
And we have a recording just given to us a day or two ago by an anonymous source of I think it might be an off-the-air background recording where he says that he has over 600 fake Twitter accounts. That he is the world's most prolific Twitter spammer. That you have to skullfrack. I'm paraphrasing for the radio audience. You have to skullfrack the customer in order to trick them into coming to your website. Okay, and much worse. I haven't even listened to the full recording.
This is pretty bizarre. I mean, skullfrack. He's talking about hitting people over the head with a hammer, as it were. I mean, that's what he's talking about, fracturing their skulls.
No. You know how you skull...
Verbally, of course.
No. Mentally, skullfrack somebody, you know? Just trick them, deceive them. It's like when you're listening to this recording, you're like, oh, my God, he's actually saying this. And he's got this whole group of cronies around him. And that's the thing about psychopaths as well, is that they need an entourage. They need an audience. They've always got these little protoplasm kind of sacks of scum that hang around them, kind of thing, that don't have any mind of their own and simply enjoy playing the victim, I think. And they're often just as vicious, just as nasty, just as dark and cold and heartless as the psychopath themselves. But they've barely got anything going for them, and they have to attach themselves to somebody else. Whereas Pete, being a real primo psycho, I've not seen psychopathy of this caliber in my life before. One came close a number of years ago. This kind of pedophile sort of gang member sort of dude who was pretending to be an activist kind of thing so that he could hire other activists and get them to work for him for free, you know, setting up his businesses and that kind of thing. And it just like reminded me exactly of that. This is what's happened. He's come into alternative talk radio because he knows, just like every psychopath knows, that he wants power and control. Talk radio is a great place if that's what you're seeking, because you get to lie to people constantly over the airwaves, and you get to convince them that anybody else who talks disparaging against you is a child molesting pedophile. That's what he's called me. I've got the screenshots. He says, Vinny Eastwood is a child molester. Another Twitter one here. Anybody who is criticizing the Pete Santilli show is either a child molester or is practicing incest. 99% of them do. Right? An insane quote. Then,
isn't that bizarre?
Yeah, I mean, in the meantime, he was stealing my company, you know? My company name, my company concept, all of that kind of stuff. So I was like, you know what? Frack this guy. Let's do it. Let's expose him. And so we wrote up a legal document. We sent it on to him, explaining all of the things that he'd done wrong, showing how many of the 20 guerrilla media principles, which he even helped come up with to a certain degree. I think he'd violated something like 16 out of the 20 in as little as 2-3 days. You know? And these are just basic, simple principles that instill journalistic credibility, honesty, and integrity. Right? And if he can violate that many principles of honesty and integrity and credibility, then you have none of the above. Do you? This is why he has no qualms about telling outrageous, outrageous, outlandish, unsubstantiated lies about everybody for any reason. This is the reason why he has no scruples about threatening violence against anybody, even a spinally injured veteran living in Australia. He says, "I will knock your teeth out."
It's very, very
man
strange.
In a wheelchair, you know.
Were you aware that Santilli had made these remarks that Stu Webb was attributing to him back in May about Hillary and all that? I mean, had you?
Yeah, yeah. Well, this whole incident with Pete and me and him taking the company happened in January, mate. All right, I've been trying to expose him since then. I mean, here's the other thing. I feel real guilty, Jim, because I've had the opportunity to be ranting and raving and attacking and exposing Pete Santilli all this time since January, and I've tried to stay under the radar, tried to keep out of it, you know, let him steal Guerrilla Media from me. Just go ahead, you know, I'll make a better Guerrilla Media. And I don't really even have time to make a better Guerrilla Media because I'm doing my radio show and all of this other kind of stuff. And I realize, you know what, he's really going to, every single time that he's on his radio broadcast and he says, "We're broadcasting live on the Guerrilla Media Network," that just grates on me so much. It's like somebody's stolen your child and then turned them into a beauty queen and then marches them out in front of the audience every single day and says, "This is my child, nobody else's. It's my child. I did all the work. I did all the grooming. I did everything."
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
And to sit there and know that it's your child and that they stole her from you and that you can never get her back, because they're violent thugs who will defame and destroy your entire life and existence if you try. That was the thing that was keeping me back from exposing him, was the fear of what he could do. And he can do anything. All right? Imagine somebody who is unafraid to threaten somebody in a wheelchair. Imagine what a person like that is capable of. Now, since the truckers, since a Facebook profile that had over 200,000 likes was hijacked by Pete Santilli, and the Twitter profiles too, and all the people on the inside, the organizers, the people taking the donations, the truckers themselves, all being taken in by Pete and just whoomph, just completely and utterly screwed over. Goodness knows how much donations were taken. And now we hear Ben Swan was asking for donations as well. And Pete Santilli started raising donations for him and then stole them off him as well. These are just preliminary reports, but it fits the profile, doesn't it? This is what he does. If you are involved, and I'll talk to the listeners now, if you listen to Pete Santilli, stop listening to him, stop giving him clicks. If you have been a guest on the Pete Santilli show, stop replying to his emails, stop coming on his broadcast, because the only reason why he wants you to listen to him is so he can feed you lies. The only reason why he wants you on his radio broadcast is so he can take something from you. There is no possibility of a positive and good relationship with this man. You have a look. Just Google Pete Santilli exposed or anything of that nature, and you will see a litany of videos of people that he has messed around. Almost everybody that has ever worked for him has come out against him after the fact, okay? There's a reason for that. It's because he treats everybody the same, and that is awfully. So good people with a conscience who don't want him to continue hurting, abusing, manipulating people are standing up. And that's why we started the Pete Santilli Victims Coalition, so that people can actually stand up against this monstrous tyrant of a man and bring him down. Because if we've got a talk radio show host who is now coming on to mainstream coverage, he's been in the Huffington Post, he is a skilled manipulator, and in the media, that's usually all you need. Isn't it? In order to rise all the way to the top, as you can defame anybody who speaks badly about you. You can threaten anybody who doesn't take your intimidation lying down. And you can directly sabotage and hack people who actually try and fight against you. He's got all of these defense mechanisms, an army of trolls. An army so dark, it's almost like marching into Mordor with the orcs and the gremlins and the goblins, where the very air you breathe is a poisonous fume. They're toxic, parasitical people that have no interest in truth, honor, respect, dignity, or their fellow man. They're strictly in it for their own enjoyment. They enjoy telling lies about us. They enjoy it. They laugh about it. They know that they don't care. They actually know that they're the bad guy, and they enjoy it.
Fascinating, Vinny. Fascinating. There's actually a Pete Santilli victims organization or group? I mean, tell me about that.
Well, I started that after the truckers had all their donations allegedly defrauded by Pete Santilli. We don't have evidence to substantiate that, how much money he stole, or even any evidence to substantiate that he even stole money at all. We do have a lot of very suspicious circumstances which are very suggestive that he did. So with that, as soon as I found out that he derailed the entire truckers rode for the Constitution and took over all of their broadcasting stuff and sandwiched his way in there. He always goes in and takes control of organizations by basically lying and intimidating his way in there, and then intimidating and lying his way into taking control completely. And this is what he did to all of those people. And then I saw this and I was like, oh my God, we now have a really good opportunity, because he is committed such scumbaggery and effed off so many people from what he's done here, and he'll try and spin it his way. And I was not prepared to sit back and see the truckers of America go down because people were unskilled or unable or didn't have the media platform in order to get the truth out about this incident. So Suzanne Posel and I started calling up these people who were criticizing Santilli on Twitter, the people who were some of the organizers and people who were in deep with the trucker protest. We interviewed them, put them up on YouTube. They've now got thousands upon thousands of hits. And we're starting to expose the truth about them. And it occurred to me that as soon as we started doing that, other people were starting to come out and ask us to interview them about what Pete Santilli had done. Other people were inviting us on radio shows to talk about Pete Santilli, because this had really started to spiral out of control. It was starting to get really big. It was supposed to be a covert operation to infiltrate, sabotage a movement called the Trucker Protest, and then get away scot-free with the money and derail the movement so that people would lose interest in rising up. But it backfired really massively because he got exposed by us and the people at the top of the trucker movement. It's been really bad for him, so bad, in fact, that his facts was taken off his hard drive to the FBI. This is to the best of our knowledge, this fax is a genuine article. We still have another screenshot of the sent and received messages from Pete Santilli's desktop of his computer, which we're still waiting to have verified as well, but that also appears genuine. That he's literally faxing the FBI, mentions his handler, who is one of the top-ranking FBI, who is the head of the San Diego field office, I think, and was also the head of a cyber terrorism task force. And Peter's saying that you said that this would not happen, that I would be protected. Where is my protection? You know, this kind of thing. And the video's up there online, ladies and gentlemen. You can search Pete Santilli, FBI informant. You should be able to see the video where we read through the facts and also try and vet the document while we're going through it with a number of searches we did to verify the phone number and verify the identity of the FBI handler that he mentioned. So, knowing that, Pete Santilli actually is an FBI informant, right? Now, have a look at his behavior. Now have a look at how he's been treating people. Now have a look at the ideas that he's been stealing. Now have a look at the movements that he's been subverting. Now have a look at how many times he has threatened and intimidated people, breached some intellectual property, and no legal consequences whatsoever. The guy's practically frickin' untouchable. Some of the truckers, I think Tom Lacarova, I think his name is, has called the DC police on him. And the DC police appear very interested. And in fact, this has happened a number of times where...
Vinny, hold that thought. We're going to take our second break. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal. My special guest today, Vinny Eastwood and Suzanne Posel, were talking about this fellow named Pete Santilli and trying to make heads or tails of what's going on with him. We'll be right back. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, continuing my conversation with Suzanne Posell and Vinnie Eastwood. Vinnie, you were making points about actually notifying the police. Was that the Washington, D.C. police about Santilli's actions and apparent confiscation of funds?
Well, yeah, and also he's been reported to the FBI. He's been reported to the Secret Service. He's been reported to police. Yet.
Well, I have an update on that.
Tell us, Susan. Go ahead.
He was threatening a woman who is a co-host on Freedomizer Radio. And she lives in B.C., and she and I were talking on the phone this morning. The five-week investigation is complete, and the Canadian police believe that combined with the terroristic threats he made about Hillary Clinton, as well as threats to shoot this woman in her vagina, they are considering this terrorist threat, and the Canadian police are going to speak with the United States about Mr. Pete Santilli. She is also in contact with another gentleman who Pete threatened to rape and shoot his wife and shoot him. And he reported that to the Texas Police Department in Texas, the police department where he lives. And so they're talking with California. And so I directed her to speak to that gentleman as well as the gentleman who's working with the D.C. police, because there are three independent investigations going on right now. But if they all combined, this would definitely be something that be worth extradition and remove Pete Santilli from California and have to answer for charges in D.C., Canada, and in Texas.
This is fascinating. I mean, this man's character appears to be quite warped and perverted. I mean,
well, I think the word
is
evil.
Is true. It's just bizarre.
Yeah, the word is evil, Jim. I mean, there's no greater embodiment, or in fact, actually, there is a better word. He is the very embodiment, epitome of the word that I've created called scumbaggery.
Scumbaggery. Yes.
All right. The scumbaggery of Santilli knows no bounds. I mean, you know, you're familiar with Dune, you know? Do we have scumbaggery sign? Sir, we have scumbaggery the likes of which even God has not seen. That's Pete Santilli.
What's very strange? Where did this guy come from? How did he grow up so warped? I mean, this is a very strange personality and that he should be on the radio? I mean, that's practically bizarre all by itself.
Mm.
Well, it appears that I don't know much about his high school or childhood, but when he was in the Marines, he was a Lance Corporal. He was an E3. I asked my father about E3 because he left, it's very low rank.
Yeah,
my father said that's
rank,
a dum dum.
Sure.
He was an aviation ombudsman. So he was not moving conventional weapons across the country. He was moving a box from an airplane to a platform or the flatbed of a truck. Very low rank. He probably would not have been given any type of secret FBI or you know, military clearance to work on any kind of documents at all. And I've since retracted those articles that I wrote about that because it's just not true. He attended school right out of the Marines, a tech school in Southern California, cashed in his GI Bill, and then left, dropped out of school. So he worked with his...
Yeah, the security clearance you'd have would be more a function of the duties you are performing rather than your rank. But Lance Corporal is indeed a lesser rank. I mean, even in the enlisted ranks, I mean, you know, Corporal... He never made corporal. Corporal is usually a sign that a person is a reasonably competent and capable enlisted man. And then, of course, beyond corporal, sergeant, various ranks of sergeant, staff sergeant, gunnery sergeant, first sergeant. I mean, there are a whole host of ranks. But, I mean, for him, how long was he in the Marine Corps? A couple of years?
83 to 88.
5 years and he only made Lance Corporal? I wonder if he was ever of higher rank and busted. I mean, you know.
I know.
Very strange. I would think someone would make Lance Corporal in like a year and a half, not 8 years.
No, yes. Yeah, he was in there for 5 years, and he didn't even do anything with it.
Yeah.
He was not the person that he purports to be. He worked for a manufacturing company who made bottles that happened to be filled with Coca-Cola. He did not work for Coca-Cola. He found out that the truckers who were shipping from the bottling plant the products that happened to be Coca-Cola were getting misappropriated on their time stamps and their checks.
I mean, they're being shorted on the time clock? They weren't being paid for the amount of time they put in?
Yes, and he found out about the, and he kind of attached himself to that whole deal.
So did Sam Tilly parlay the fact that he'd been a trucker himself working for Coca-Cola?
No, he kind of...
No, he wasn't even
He intimidated the legal team. He intimidated the legal team of that particular class action lawsuit of the truckers versus Coca-Cola into putting his name on that piece of paper along with the truckers who he had basically nothing to do with. He wasn't even a trucker himself. He wasn't even owed any overtime, you know? He was just trying to get his name on that document so that when they won their case, without his help at all, he can then go out and claim to everybody, I led the entire prosecution and won against Coca-Cola. So now all of a sudden you hear that, you're like, wow, this person must be really amazing. He must be incredibly trustworthy and really honorable and stuff. And then you start sharing all your ideas with this amazing, honorable and trustworthy person. And he steals him! He's
now,
onto it!
Strange. I had this odd event yesterday where it turned out that somebody had hijacked my email address, which Gordon tells me is a relatively simple thing to do, and sent out a file under my name saying, you know, please open this file. You know, it wasn't the way I would ever communicate with anyone, but it was done under my name, and it appears to have gone out to at least 100 people. And from what I'm being told, it's some sort of executable file. I don't know that anyone has suffered any harm from it. I have heard some people tried to open it and couldn't open it before I got to them to tell them that I hadn't sent it and they should delete it. But I'm just wondering, I mean, it has been traced back to a server in Arizona. I just wonder if this could be sort of an anticipatory strike by Pete Santilli because I'm featuring you guys to discuss him today. I mean,
well, Pete Santilli took, it's called spoofing. There was a bunch of emails that were sent to people that I knew in the movement, people who had showed up on my show and people I had relationships with, you know, business, you know, peer related relationships. And, the reason why I found out about this was because when he was spoofing my emails, he sent me an email. And so I gave it to the hosting company that I was with at the time. And they told me that it did not originate on my server, explained to me what a spoof email was. And we traced the IP address to a company in New York and that is owned by someone who shows up on Pete's show.
So you're telling me Santilli has done this spoofing in the past so that I might actually be right in my conjecture that he might have had to do with this
yesterday?
Yeah,
there's a way, my husband might be able to show you. There's a way that you, when you pull up the email, you can look at the back script of the email, and inside every email is the originating IP address inside of every email.
Well, listen, Suzanne, let me send this to your...
You can email it to my husband. And
and see if he can do anything with it, because, I mean, it was just dawning on me as we were talking here that, you know, the only person I have ever had an encounter with who might do something as crude and juvenile as this might be Pete Santilli. So even without knowing that he'd done this in the past, I'm conjecturing, just thinking out loud, could he possibly have been responsible? And you tell me he's been doing this in the past.
Yes. Yeah, he did it to me. He sent it to a bunch of people that I work with in the movement. And I didn't notice, I noticed that people wouldn't respond to me or wouldn't come on my show, and I didn't know why. And I got this email, and it was admin at Occupy Corporatism to admin at Occupy Corporatism, and I said, what the hell is this? I was with 1&1 at the time, so I mailed it to them, I have the email verifying that it didn't originate on their servers, so I didn't send the email. And they explained to me what, and my husband went on a couple of websites. Spoofing email is a very easily obtainable, downloadable program or software or whatever. I'm not sure what you call it. Anybody can do it. It's like the easiest hack you could possibly do.
That's what Gordon told me, because I told him what had happened to me. I even sent him a copy of it, and he said it's called spoofing, and there's a real simple program to do it, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
You see? And again,
I mean, how infantile, but then that's consistent with the character of this man.
Well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you can assume the worst, but you can't hope for the best.
Yes. Assume the worst, but we can't hope for the best.
Yeah, and this is why Pete Santilli must be exposed entirely, completely. I believe he is a criminal and should be jailed after a very fair trial by a jury of his peers. I believe his rights should be respected and will give him precisely the opposite of what he's given everybody else. Justice.
Now, I found Stu Webb's article, which Gordon had removed, according to Stu, from Veterans Today, possibly because of...
There's a reason for that. The reason why it was removed is because Gordon feels, and he said this to me before, and I happen to agree with the mentality to an extent, that the best approach is to just say nothing. To go like, what, Pete who? I disagree on that for this particular reason. He's growing in fame and popularity by the day, right? He's hurting and destroying more lives by the day. And you imagine all the time wasted by people listening to his broadcast who are being fed nothing but lies, when there are many, many great radio shows and credible journalists out there that actually deserve their ears more, I believe, because they're not trying to threaten or intimidate you. And that's why I believe there has to be a movement of good, honorable, decent people who are willing to stand up for what is right and bring Pete Santilli to justice, because you can't do this on your own. Okay, Suzanne Posel and I tried to do it by ourselves. Suzanne's website got hacked. It was down for like what, nearly a month, Suzanne?
Absolutely corrupted and destroyed.
Yeah, they had to start from scratch. Unbelievable. She had a website that was like among the top 10,000 websites in the world, and it got taken down and had to start from scratch.
Really?
Yes.
And that was
after we reported him for cyber stalking to the police, to the DHS, to the FBI.
Well, that's got to be a criminal offense. There must be sufficient laws about cyber, you know, conduct.
As we say, there are currently three investigations. So Suzanne says that are currently looking into this guy. I have a sneaking suspicion that because he's an informant, alleged informant, that basically somebody will get a phone call and they'll say, "Leave this guy alone. He's one of our agents. He's one of our informants."
Some degree of protection.
Yeah, that's what I think. Because he threatens the FBI at the Department of Justice. He threatened to expose them if they didn't protect him from us. He threatened the FBI, saying that if I am exposed, I will tell my side of the story, which is probably a lie, that you approached me, that you intimidated me into it. So if the direct opposite of everything Santilli says is generally the case, that means, and this is the real scary part, what if he actually approached the FBI to say, "I'm a former Marine, I want to work with you to sabotage the truth movement, and what I want out of it is a big giant radio show so I can have a whole bunch of victims to feed off.
Well, you know, there are several curious aspects about this, in particular in relation to Judy Wood and Pete Santilli, because at one point I got some huge email, you know, promoting Judy Wood, and as I recall, it was attacking me, and it went to about, there were at least 10 copies on the list. And when I replied to it, one of them bounced, and it bounced from the ADL, from the Anti-Defamation League, leading me to believe that Judy was, you know, doing her thing for the ADL, which made me to try to defeat anyone from looking into 9/11 far enough that they understand there was collusion between the neocons and the Department of Defense and the Mossad to promote, you know, to bring about an event that would lead to a revision in American foreign policy, where instead of only attacking a country if it had attacked us first, we became the aggressor nation and launched all these wars in the Middle East to destabilize the governments of the modern sophisticated Arab states who are standing as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the Middle East, which appears to have been the, you know, one of the primary objectives of the contrived events of 9/11. Plus, of course, all these Muslim nations, because Islam forbids usury, are nations in which there were no central banks, and you know that the Rothschilds' empire was basically excluded from the Middle East because of the religious tradition there, where I was absolutely struck when the rebels in Libya, their first act was to found a new central bank, and it was obvious to me at that point that things were not as they were supposed to be. But if Judy, you know, it suggested to me rather strongly, this woman just happened to be out of her office, so that, you know, over the weekend or whenever, so that this email bounced and it identified her as with the ADL. I mean, is there collusion between the ADL and Judy and Santilli and the FBI somehow all together to thwart and subvert research on 9/11? I mean, could that be part and parcel of what this is all about?
Well, I've said it for a long time. When it comes to scumbaggery, there's no upper limit, right? There's a limit to how good you can be, but there's no limit to how bad you can be. That's one of the great things about the human condition, is that to be good isn't to do like amazing things so much as it is to exercise restraint. To do evil is to have absolutely none. That's what I've started to
say. The point you're making actually is impeccable, because the good guys are constrained by not being willing to resort to techniques, methods, and ways of doing things that bad people aren't restrained from doing. So
exactly.
Good guys should act in an ethical fashion and always treat other persons with respect, but bad guys are perfectly willing to use other persons purely as means to advance their own agenda, which is well illustrated by classic cases of murder, robbery, kidnapping, and rape, where people are just reduced to being instruments to advance the interests of others without any regard whatsoever for their own well-being or best interests.
Well, this is why a number of people have approached me, talking to me about Pete Santilli. They don't want to get involved. I'm not going to mention their names or anything like that. But some of them take my side but don't want to come public. Some of them are confused because they don't know who's lying. And it's like this. You've got two choices. I mean, after reviewing the evidence, okay, review everything Pete Santilli said about me and everybody else who criticizes him, and then view what other people are saying criticizing about Santilli. That's actually quite a workload. Okay, you've got to go there in order to get to the real truth of the matter. So this radio broadcast is actually a very good idea, Jim, and I thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to come on and talk on this topic, because you're doing so willingly, and I would actually recommend anybody who wants to come out and publicly criticize Santilli, do not do it blindly, okay? Go in with your eyes wide open. He has an army of followers. He has no scruples. He will come after you. He will threaten you. He will defame you. He may hack you. He may do all sorts of things. And so if you want to come out and support us, just understand what it is that you're risking. Okay, I understand what I'm risking because I understand what is at stake. I understand that the country of the United States is at stake. And that if you've got violent, aggressive, patriot talk radio show hosts who are calling to storm the White House with guns, who are calling to shoot leaders, who are calling to have special forces take out the leadership, as he has done on another broadcast, then that can tar all of us with that brush. This ain't a freedom of speech thing. This is, he will be used. This is now what's occurring to me. The FBI might have told Santilli, go out there and say the most craziest, most insane, horrific, violent, aggressive things that you possibly can against the US government, which we're going to use as a pretext to cut down on every single patriot who is doing a radio show like yours.
Well, this makes him a classic agent provocateur. I mean, that's a well-known role of those who go into a movement or a group and try to encourage them to do things to incite them to actions they normally would never have done in order to bring about or justify a retaliation.
Mm.
I mean, you know, that's a classic role, the agent provocateur. We had a thing here in Wisconsin where this huge mining company wants to create an enormous open pit iron mine up near Lake Superior. And I think it's just ghastly, absolutely ghastly idea. And there's a Republican legislature here that's working in concert with them. And we have a Republican governor who is an opportunist of the most crass variety and who's aided and abetted by the Koch brothers. And where I think to attempt to discredit critics of the mining operation, which is just going to be catastrophic for the environment and for Wisconsin, which has this wonderful past tradition of environmental protection and progressivism, they had some little band, you know, threatened to dynamite or blow up or do some violent action up there, because of which then Global Tectonic, this company, hired mercenary, you know, forces that had automatic weapons. They were violating the law in doing it, but they stationed them all over the place, allegedly to protect them from the onslaught of these radical environmentalists. And I believe the whole radical environmental thing was a completely contrived event to serve as a provocation. And then the state overlooked the fact that they had all these armed mercenaries stationed all over the place in violation of state law. And if you do that, you're not allowed to have them serve for a year in the state under the law. But these Republicans are perfectly willing to violate the law willy-nilly if it benefits them somehow. And I have no doubt it's benefiting them somehow, quite possibly financially, because this is turning out to be an astoundingly corrupt administration, so far as I can tell. I mean, you know, I'm just shocked. When I moved down here to Wisconsin, I from Minnesota, which is also generally a very progressive state, I actually felt I was getting an even better situation, because Wisconsin has this wonderful tradition of support for public education, a wonderful system of higher education, a progressive liberal tradition going back to Bob La Follette, fighting Bob and all that, and basically a government that is a good steward for the community and the public interest. But we got this new governor, Scott Walker, and he's done all kinds of things to undermine. He fabricated a massive budget deficit, which appears to have been just an illusion, not a reality. And he has gutted public education to the tune of $800 million. He turned down a similar amount, $800 million from the federal government to create a high-speed rail from Milwaukee to Madison, which meant that to create the interstate system, they had to go all the way around Wisconsin to get to Minneapolis. He came in claiming he was going to get jobs going here in the state, but he's had a miserable record. And I think that Wisconsin has been constantly dropping. And part of the problem, of course, is he's doing all these things like giving tax breaks to companies that aren't the reason why companies would come to Wisconsin. They come to Wisconsin because it has great public education, because it's a very environmentally friendly state, very progressive state and all that. And he's gutting the very reasons why companies would come here for the very base consideration of giving them tax cuts. I mean, it's just stunning. In my opinion, it's impoverishing Wisconsin in a manner that I have never imagined even possible, just in the short period of time I've been here since I moved in 2006 from Duluth to near Madison. I've just been dumbfounded by all these.
And
but
now,
the role of provocateurs seems to me to be exactly what you're describing in relation to Santilli, Vinny. It sounds to me as though he's a classic agent provocateur.
And now we have to go to a break, Jim.
Yeah, I think we do. Let me check. Jim, let me check the timing on this thing so I can see. I may have let us go over.
Yeah, about 30 seconds.
I'm telling you, this is really fascinating stuff, and the idea that he could have been spoofing me in anticipation of my having the two of you on is really striking. Clearly, he's keeping his ear to the ground, and he's just as vindictive as he's ever been, and he doesn't want discussion of him taking place anywhere at any time, including here and now. So
it's time to do the direct opposite of everything that he wants.
Yeah, really quite a remarkable situation. So this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal. We're taking our final break with my special guests, Susan Posell and Vinny Eastwood. We'll be right back. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, concluding my conversation with Susan Paso and Vinny Eastwood. I want to tell you guys, I read this article, you know, that the Stu had written that Gordon took down on the Avalon Project Avalon Forum, which I believe is run by a lot of pilots, members of Pilots for 9/11 Truth, if I'm not mistaken. But there's one guy named Weezer who had a comment about it that I've got to read to you guys to elicit your reaction. He says, regarding Pete Santilli exposes FBI informant VT article, I hope Eastwood and Posell are able to let go of this severe hostility towards Santilli and move forward. The infighting is such a waste of time. We all need to work together. I am a fan of the Pete Santilli show because he continues to bring forward excellent guests and has two of my favorite guys in alternative media on his team, Jason Leah Santos and Patrick Hennington. These guys are professional journalists with utmost integrity. I think many Avaloners would enjoy their work. And then there are two links here to 21stCenturyWire.com and to JasonLeahSantos.com. For the record, in my opinion, in my humble opinion, Eastwood, Posell, and Webb are putting out fabricated information. It's very sad to see Posell and Eastwood's obsession for getting back at Santilli. They just end up looking pathetic and desperate. Their shows are no longer about exposing the real enemies, military, industrial complex, the super elite, etc., but instead about what a psychopath Pete Santilli is.
Well, this person has obviously never listened to either one episode of the Vinny Eastwood Show or one episode of Hardline News with Suzanne Posell. Because do you know how many of our shows that we've spent talking about Pete Santilli since all this incident happened? Not one.
How many?
Not one.
Zero.
All the comments and everything that we've done.
I was on my show last Thursday, and we were talking about the corruption in the electoral process and with the Diebold and all of that debacle. And my fans are very happy with the guests that I'm putting on my show.
Yeah.
And I don't spend any time. I wrote this article about Pete Santilli because it's newsworthy.
Yeah.
Because if there's another Hal Turner in our midst, then we need to take a look at this evidence and weed it out.
Well, just for the record, I mean, after my experience with Santilli, which I thought was so bizarre, I published an article entitled Lunatics Are Us, the Santilli-Wood Sunstein Gambit, which I published on Veterans Today, and I hope everyone will read because it really recounts in considerable detail what I went through and how bizarre it was. Just for the record, I want to read the rest of this. It's only about as much longer as I've already read, just because this guy is trying to stand up for Santilli, and I want to present the other side to the extent to which there is one. He goes on to say, Vinny can't get over Pete taking his idea for Guerrilla Media Network earlier this year. Yeah, Pete was wrong for doing that, but it doesn't mean it's okay now to just make up stories to reduce his listenership, does it? They are perpetuating and exaggerating rumors with no factual basis to serve a personal vendetta. Ever since January of this year, Postle and Eastwood's number one objective in life has been to go after Santilli. And quite frankly, I think it was Gordon Duff who inspired them to do so. It's a lot about minimizing what Dr. Judy Wood brought forward. Anyone who has listened to the Duff recording Santilli published heard Duff admit he works with the Israelis because they get the job done. I mean, are you kidding me? Of course Duff should be exposed for that. Duff is an egotistical maniac who constantly brags about how big time he is, but then why is he taking the system down? Who does he work for? Is Santilli controversial? Yes. Does he have a radical way of expressing his justified anger toward Clinton and Obama? Sure. Does he record each and every conversation and cover his ass? Yes. But so what? I'm all for that level of transparency. Like anyone else on AFR, Pete wasn't afraid to question Fetzer. Unlike anyone else on AFR, Pete wasn't afraid to question Fetzer and Duff. I commend him for that. If people don't like Pete Santilli's vulgar style and radical delivery, then they don't have to listen. Huh. I think that's pretty strange. And, you know, how was he not afraid to question me, for example? He wasn't questioning me. He was verbally assaulting me. It was like using clubs, you know, verbal clubs to bash me. There was nothing rational or reasonable about it unless his objective was to try to put me in a position where I was going to abandon the show. That was really what he was after. He kept asking me, "You're not going to leave now, Jim, are you? You're not going to leave, are you?" And I assured him, "No, I'm not going to leave because I knew damn well I wasn't going to leave. I knew he wanted that more than anything. I just knew, like Muhammad Ali, I was going to do the rope-a-dope and see how this all played out.
I'm going to be dancing. He ain't going to land a blow on me. I'm going to dance."
Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
Yeah. Float like a
by the way, along with Bill Russell and Jack and Bobby and a number of others, but there you have it.
Yeah. Fits are like a butterfly.
Any merit whatsoever to what this fellow whose name is handle is Weezer?
It's the direct opposite of every. Basically, try and read it out again and then use the direct opposite of what he's saying, and that will be the truth, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, me and Suzanne tried to, for a good six or, what was it, a good six, seven, maybe even 8 months or something, didn't do nothing about Santilli, okay? We're just sitting in the background, hoping he goes away, and he keeps mentioning us on his frickin' radio show. He keeps going. He keeps demonizing us. He keeps attacking us, and we just got frickin' sick of it, you know? I mean, we're trying to leave him alone. Sure, he stole my company. Frickin' take it, okay? You probably can't even make it work the way it's meant to anyway. It's really frustrating for me because everybody thinks Guerrilla Media is mine when he's stolen it or something like that. So if he does something bad, it comes back to me and people say that I'm saying it and it promotes confusion and all of that kind of stuff. I'm willing to put up with that. But what I'm not going to be putting up with. Is not only is he attacking and defaming me on his radio show on a regular basis, but on top of that, he's attacking, destroying, derailing movements of good, honest, hardworking, decent Americans who are trying to save the country from frickin' tyranny while he's working for the enemy. Okay? Yeah, I'm not going to frickin' put up with that. I'm not even an American, and even I know that that's freaking wrong.
This is my issue. There is a document that's coming from Pete Santilli to the FBI field office in Sacramento, California. And what it says is very, very damning. There's a screenshot of the e-fax where it originated and showing that it was successfully sent to the FBI field office. So why are we talking about infighting? Why are we talking about whether or not Suzanne Posel or Vinnie Eastwood likes Pete Santilli? This is about a document that was sent from him to the field office and the contents of that document. And everyone is talking about everything but that document. And that bothers me.
Everyone's talking about everything but that document. Nice point, Suzanne, very nice point.
Yes, yeah, now
that is
there's a difference.
That is the strongest proof that he actually is working as an informant for the FBI.
Now there's a difference
and it's also
between
in alternative media. there a lot of big names in alternative media have contacted me about this, and the purveying attitude is infighting. They won't even look at the document.
It's How okay. is this infighting? I mean, you know, we all know. I mean, that's why it was the Santilli Wood Sunstein gamut. Cass Sunstein was on the faculty of Harvard Law School. He's now an advisor for Obama. Some say he may become a justice of the Supreme Court, who proposed infiltrating truth groups to try to break them apart. In other words, he was complaining about them offering so many conspiracy theories, and his response was to offer a conspiracy in order to take them down. I mean, how dumb is that?
Well, there's PatCon, and there's the MIAC report, and there's right-wing extremism. They have been trying to radicalize the Patriot movement for many decades. Pete Santilli is telling his listeners to get guns and go to Pennsylvania Avenue and demand that everyone vacate the premises. Is this not PatCon? Is this not right-wing extremism? Is this not the MIAC report?
Yeah.
Well, it's a very bad idea, and it certainly fits the role of the agent provocateur, trying to get the people to do things that the government would like them to do so they can react and claim it was justified on the basis of the actions of the people who were instigated by individuals like Pete Santilli to commit events or acts that they would otherwise never have done.
Yeah.
It's crowd psychology. It's Gustave Le Bon. This is the same tactic that they use in the Arab Spring. This is a version of the Arab Spring that they're trying to bring here, to radicalize the Patriot movement so that they can bring down martial law and blame a bunch of people and take them off to FEMA camps and kill them.
Yes. I mean, there's a reason why Homeland Security has acquired 2 billion rounds of .40 caliber hollow point ammunition, which is not even permissible for use in combat under the Hague Convention of 1899. I mean, there's something very bizarre going on here. And of course,
why isn't the alternative media legitimately looking at this document and the screenshots? Anonymous brought forth this wonderful piece of information and documentation. Why is it not being looked at with any legitimacy? It's just being carted off because it's Vinnie Eastwood and Suzanne Posel. And if in 10 years down the road, we can look back and say, oh my God, they were right. Why do we have to wait that long? Why don't we just look at the document now as a movement and assess this and see if there's damage? Because if there's another Hal Turner in our midst, we are in trouble.
And would you say this information came to the two of you because you had expressed your disdain for Santilli for his style and his actions?
We've become a lightning rod for his victims. And that's why I started the coalition. It's one of the actual guerrilla media principles is to act much like a Macedonian phalanx formation, whereby you have shields all lined up next to each other. But your job with your shield isn't actually to protect yourself. It's not even to kill the enemy. It's simply to protect the person next to you. And if everybody's protecting the person next to you, nobody's back is uncovered. All right? So this is what I'm doing. I'm trying to protect all of these people who have been victimized by Santilli by giving them coverage, by putting them on YouTube, by supporting them in any way that I can with whatever documents they need, if they want to write articles, if they want testimony, in anything of that nature. I'm putting myself on the line here to protect all of those other people who are coming up against Santilli in this great time of need, because we've got the opportunity now to expose him once and for all, get him out of the movement, and really, this is actually kind of a historical context for the movement, when we've actually got the documents to expose one of our own, allegedly, as an actual FBI informant working within the truth movement. This is big news. This is really important. This is not infighting. Infighting is when you have a difference of opinion and people start calling each other names. This is when we found out he's a frickin' agent and we've got the documents to prove it, and we're exposing him so that he can't continue to provoke angry responses from the government against the Patriot movement. This does not qualify as infighting. If anything, this is like a mole hunt.
Yeah, I think that's good. That's a good comparison. That's a very good comparison, Vinny. What struck me about this note from Weezer is he says...
It's probably Pete Santilli, okay?
Well, it might be. He says, it's a lot about minimizing what Judy Wood brought forward. Well, look, I mean, I gave Judy Wood 15 radio shows, 3 hours to speak in Madison, published a chapter. You know, who's minimizing what Judy Wood did? The fact is, her theory can't account for the evidence at the Twin Towers. It doesn't explain where the 10 Twin Towers went. She's got a book that says, where did the Twin Towers go? And she has a subtitle that says, evidence for the use of the directed free energy technology on 9/11. And yet she denies she even has a theory. What could be more obvious than that her theory is that directed free energy technology was used on 9/11? When I called in when she made an appearance on the Bob Duskin show and asked her why she claimed she didn't have a theory, which is a philosopher of science, is to me such an obvious question when she obviously has a theory. She went kind of semi-catatonic. She didn't want to answer, you know. I mean, it was very, very strange. And I'm just wondering what it means if you have this collusion between Pat Santilli, who's an FBI informant, and Judy Wood, whose associates include the ADL. Something is going on there. And here's something about Judy Wood, too. She always emphasizes the how. We have to figure out how the buildings were destroyed before we can figure out the who and the why. Well, some of us can chew gum and walk at the same time. We've been doing research on the who and the why as well as doing research on the how. Check out my article, Peeling the 9/11 Onion, Layers of Plots Within Plots with Preston James, where we take apart the multiple layers of deception to conceal who was really behind 9/11, which is collusion between the U.S. neocons and the Mossad. This was a Zionist program to promote the interests in the Middle East by getting the United States to do the dirty work of Israel by dismantling the modern sophisticated Arab states. And I can only say thank God it appears to have ended with Syria, because the American people rose up in protest when Barack Obama wanted to drop cruise missiles into Syria in violation of international law. It was one of the most appalling displays of hypocrisy I've ever seen. There's no imminent threat posed by Syria under the UN Charter, which we're bound by a treaty, which under the U.S. Constitution, Article 6, has the same standing under the law as the U.S. Constitution. We could only attack another country if it either posed an imminent threat or we had approval from the UN Security Council. Neither was true. So although Obama claimed he was doing this to uphold international law, he was actually going to violate international law. And I just say, thank God for the American people. I've never been more proud, because even when they were subjected to gross exaggeration about the numbers who had been killed by the gas attacks, which appeared to have come from the rebel side, sponsored by Prince Bandar of Saudi Arabia, not from the Assad government. It would have been an absurd thing to do when the Assad government, the Syrian army, had the rebels on the run and a UN inspection team was about to arrive. There was no reason in the world why Assad would use chemical weapons, but every reason in the world why the rebels would have. In fact, Vladimir Putin gave the United Nations 100 pages of documentation that it was the rebels who used the gas and not the Assad government. But nevertheless, the people, even given the false claim that 1,450 people or such have been killed by the Assad government using chemical weapons, refused to approve it by like 90%. That was one of the finest moments in recent American history, I've got to say.
And well, they've just gone to Plan B, and I've been writing about this a lot. In fact, I've got another article coming out tomorrow about it. They, after 14 years of no polio, all of a sudden polio has shown up in Syria. And they've got this huge vaccination, the World Health Organization, the UN, they're going to vaccinate every single child in Syria, including the refugees that are in other countries. And the article that I have out today about it is that now experts are saying that this is going to spread to Europe. And all over Europe, they're going to have polio, and they've got to vaccinate everybody going out from Syria.
But the vaccines, the vaccination program itself may be the weapon, the instrument of
destruction. It is the weapon. According to the World Health Organization and the CDC, and I've quoted this in my article, Polio is derived from vaccine-derived polio. So flaccid polio is derived from the vaccine.
Yep.
That it's on the CDC website and it's on the World Health Organization website, and I have the links in my article.
Sorry, because polio is one of the diseases that we had eradicated, so that it should suddenly be showing up means there has to be an inside source to provide that. I mean, this is absolutely incredible.
So we don't bomb Syria, but now they're using a bioweapon. And I wrote this article 2 days ago, and people should go to Occupy Corporatism and look this up about Syria. Back in the 2012, when all of this started, Hillary Clinton had announced that they were going to support, along with the UN, the State Department and the UN, the Syrian National Coalition. And just recently, the UN is going to be meeting in Geneva, Switzerland, and they are going to be talking about a regime change, installing the Syrian National Coalition instead of the Assad president. They're going to remove him and put in this council. Now, this council is run by a man who has ties, direct ties, to the Muslim Brotherhood.
Well, the Assad government, so far as I can see, has basically done nothing wrong. And it's just that this is the last two nations on the agenda. When Wesley Clark returned from serving as Supreme Commander, Allied Forces Europe, to the Pentagon, a general pulled him aside and said, hey, look at this. We got a plan to destabilize seven Arab countries in the next 5 years. And Wesley Clark said, why? And the general said, I don't know. Later he said, I guess they're just good at it. They just want to do something. But the fact is, this has been an agenda to promote Israeli interests.
Here's why.
And domination in the Middle East. Go for it.
Here's why they're doing it. The Israeli government found out that they have the Leviathan Basin, which is the largest, second largest natural gas deposit under the seabed in the Mediterranean. The Syrians, the Iraq and Iran Syrian pipeline was signed into into production 2 years ago, and this pipeline would directly serve natural gas to all of Europe and Asia. Now, the Israeli government has just found out that they have so much natural gas that there's no purpose for them not to be the number one or number two or even number three exporter in the country of natural gas. So Syria is right in the middle of that pipeline. And that is directly why they're taking Syria out. Right before all this stuff happened with Syria, people need to remember that in this area, they had, I'm sorry, not in Syria, forget it. I can't remember.
Well, Suzanne, I think you're right. I think you're right on top of this, and I think it's very important that you're writing about it and that all Americans need to understand better what's going on in the Middle East, because none of it is as it seems. And
right.
Barack Obama, I'm sorry to say, does not have clean hands here. And nor does, of course, AIPAC, which is going to redouble its effort to try to get us to attack Syria and continue these sanctions on both Syria and Iran, even though they're a form of collective punishment that the Nuremberg tribunals found to be a war crime, especially when our own intelligence agencies in 2007 concluded that Iran is not pursuing a nuclear weapons program, a conclusion they reaffirmed in 2011, which means
right. There
is no justification for these sanctions on Iran, which are doing a great deal of harm to the Iranian people, just as the sanctions on Iraq brought about the death of 500,000 Iraqi infants. And when Madeleine Albright was confronted and asked about this, whether it had been worth the lives of 500,000 infants, she solemnly assured the world it had been. How disgusting.
Yeah.
What has become of the United States and our loss of moral values, leadership?
That's right. The American government is not the American people, I don't think. American people, all the ones that I've met, generally very kind, very generous, often very fun. The American government, on the other hand, very evil, very corrupt, and full of scum.
Vinny and Suzanne, I'm so pleased you were here today. I expect now we can expect more in the way of spoofing and cyber attacks from the likes of Pete Santilli. It's a shame that we're having to deal with these issues, but I think everyone out there who cares about, you know, revealing the truth about 9/11 and other issues has to take this extremely seriously. This is Jim Fetzer thanking my special guests, Suzanne Possel and Vinnie Eastwood, for being here, and all of you for listening.